Oh.
Outstanding. Thank you, Becky. Thank you for everything you do as well. You're outstanding. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
We've got a great speaker today from Nashville, and she's Ariel Ellis, who's going to talk about bringing diversity and inclusion to the conversation. Hopefully you got her bio. And what is impressive to me is her early involvement in PRSA. And we need more like you, Ariel. So thank you so much for doing this for us today. So they're all yours. You've got about 45 minutes or so. And then if there's any questions, so feel free. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you to everybody for joining today. I'm really excited to chat with you. I really like engaging conversation. So feel free after I make any points to jump in and ask questions. Definitely don't want you to have to wait until the end to ask any questions. So if you hear anything that you want me to kind of elaborate on throughout the course of the call, feel free to jump in and just let me know your name, where you're from, and shoot your question out to me. But I want to first maybe start letting you know what's going on nationally. Currently, I serve as Secretary for the National Committee for Diversity and Inclusion. And actually, we just hosted a very successful tweet chat last night in observation of Black History Month in conjunction with the National Association of Black Journalists. And it was a really, really good chat about PR and media and the need for diversity and, to kind of cultivate diversity in both industries and how we can work together to ensure that. So we had an amazing chat last night, but there are some really interesting initiatives that we have rolling out nationally that are going to impact the local chapters. One is we have a very specific initiative to develop chapter liaisons for all of the chapters through our committee to communicate to each chapter what are some of the really key initiatives that we want to kind of see fostered from an organizational standpoint and see grow throughout the organization as a whole internationally. So myself, as well as the president of the San Francisco chapter, we have collaborated and started to develop a series of webinars, trainings, conversations, etc. We've got a list of all the chapter presidents and diversity chairs and determine how we're going to roll out that conversation. So you're going to start to see some emails as presidents. You're going to see emails come through. You're also going to see if you have a diversity chair, if you don't have a diversity chair, how can we work with your chair? How can maybe as president or vice president, you can serve as kind of a temporary diversity chair until you start to decide based on your area and based on your chapter what's going to work best. What are your key needs in diversity and inclusion? So you'll start to see that soon coming from us. We also have some organization-wide webinars that we're going to offer for any member just to talk about issues of diversity and inclusion as well. So just FYI, I wanted to kind of shout out the committee first because we've been working really hard to build some programming for our chapters as well as the organization as a whole. We just got approval on our diversity toolkit. You may have seen a couple years back a diversity toolkit that lived on the PRSA website. We have we've taken the past 6 months or so to update that content to make sure it's more reflective of where we are right now as an organization and where we are as an industry overall, and update that content, and that can be, as it says, a toolkit for all chapters as well as all members. So we have information for chapters and for members in that document. You'll see us begin to roll that out too. So we've been really, really busy for the committee. And outside of that, chapter-wise, I was appointed diversity chair for Nashville chapter back in maybe 2012-2013. And initially, my predecessor had done a really good job in creating content or creating programming around our monthly luncheon, but that is essentially kind of where it stopped. And I was interested in making sure we were having programming around diversity that was consistently weaved into our regular programming. And I figured out, what can we do? What can we do to keep the conversation going? And before I even mention that, I also want to mention first that if you have not accessed the diversity study that the PRSA Foundation did, that's a good tool, too. And just, you know, we often just think about diversity as race, age, and gender. And many organizations, not just our industry, usually when we think of diversity, those are the key things that we think about, right? But now there's a need to re-explain or redefine, reframe what diversity is. And you'll notice that I said diversity and inclusion committee. We added the word inclusion because we felt like if that's the standard for the practice, which is typically lives in human resources, as most of you know, we figure we need to add that word as well for our organization. So we did that. But thinking about diversity beyond race, age, and gender, we also need to think about generations, generational phases, professional and career differences, levels of ability and or disability, education background, sexual preference, religion, and then your field of work, say, versus, you know, corporate versus agency versus nonprofit, et cetera. So building out and spelling out a more inclusive, you know, no pun intended, a more inclusive definition of what diversity actually is. So that was part of the process from the National Committee, and I'm glad that my idea of what we needed to do in Nashville was matching the ideas and the thoughts of our colleagues who were already serving in that national capacity. So it was a natural fit. So I would definitely ask you to think about, for your chapters, how can we be extremely inclusive beyond race, age, and gender? Was there a question? No? Okay, I thought I heard something. Okay. So to just to kind of give you some background on what we did for Nashville, in my line of work, I'm highly engaged in this kind of work anyway, but by 2045, we're looking at, you know, multicultural consumers making up more than half of the U.S. population.
Mm-hmm.
So when we consider, of course, we know we've got to know our audience. We've got to know how to keep up with the demands in business and consumer needs, et cetera. And PR is not the only industry that is, you know, trying to adjust to diversity. I know you guys have heard a lot about what's happening with the Oscars in Hollywood, right? They're trying to catch up to
too.
And as a matter of fact, when you get the PR Tactics newsletter or newspaper coming up, you'll see an article from me specifically about that topic. So every industry is trying to keep up because the demographics of our world has changed so much. As I said, whether it be from race, age, and gender all the way to ability, disability, someone with a visible disability, someone who has a disability that's not so visible but may impact the way they approach their work, you know, or even sexual preference and gender beyond just male, female. So how do we approach our consumers in that way that where we can relate to them, they can relate to us, but then also how do we make sure that our organizations and our workplace is reflective of the type of people that we're serving? That's really the bottom line. We want to make sure that, you know, there are people who look like, talk like, walk like, understand the lifestyle and the understanding, the competence of the people that they're serving. And that is a disparity in a lot of different industries, but it's also one in our industry. So let me go back. If you pull that study that the foundation did, and they released it, they did it a year, maybe almost 2 years when they started the research, but they revealed the results of the study at the international conference back in Atlanta, back in November. And in revealing the research, I mean, to me it wasn't a surprise, but a couple of people that were in the room, it was definitely a surprise. And essentially, race-wise, and that's kind of how they broke it up with ethnicities, they definitely saw some really, really low numbers. Now, what they saw with women is that women were making up 60% of the profession. However, the pay gap was huge, and the levels in which women were serving in management roles were just a huge gap. But definitely the numbers as it relates to African-American, Hispanic, Asian, et cetera, practitioners, those percentages were super low in comparison even to the national makeup of of just the population in general. So if you get a chance, pull that study. It's really, really detailed. It's really long, but it's some, there are some nuggets in there that might be helpful. So in with all of that being really, really inclusive with all those things, I started to think, well, what can we do locally? Nashville, as most of y'all know, has become this it city. Just people are coming from everywhere. Our industry for PR, it's growing, of course. When more companies come, that means that there's going to be a, you know, PR office or, you know, some a PR agency that's going to service them. So that growth was really, really pivotal for our city, from the music industry to the healthcare industry, et cetera. So we started to think, how do we, as I said earlier, keep up with these changing demographics? We also saw not only with business growth, we started to try to determine how can we attract more young professionals, because we started to see some numbers kind of drop off with our young professionals. They weren't kind of hanging on and, but, you know, keeping their membership. And then how can we better engage our seasoned members as well and create programs that they'd be interested in? So one of the first things I thought about, one other thing too, budget, and thinking about how when I first joined, there was at least maybe two national speakers that we would bring in for our luncheons, and after that, that, you know, that didn't really exist anymore. So how can we be a little bit more inclusive in bringing people who do this kind of work into the organization to share their insights? So I thought, let's host a diversity chat, and let's do it for free. Let's do it via Google Hangout. That way anybody can join. And we'll feature folks who do the work of diversity communication. And so the first chat that we hosted was with the senior director of diversity communication at the AT&T headquarters in Dallas. And she had ran several campaigns for veterans, campaigns for the Hispanic community, et cetera, and was able to give us quite a bit of insight on the success that AT&T has had. And even how they've better attracted their millennial audience as well. And we saw that chat, that first chat, to be extremely successful because, one, it was free, and, two, we were able to share it via social media because you just log into Google or there's a link, and Google Hangout directly lives, the video will live on YouTube as long as, you know, you have everything set up correctly. So that was helpful. We got about 250 replays of that video. So that was a success. And so I figured, you know, let's make this a series. So I scheduled three more chats, the quarterly series, three more chats. We brought in Matias Cavallin out of Los Angeles. He is a vice president at the Zeno Group. And he spearheaded, by way of his company, he spearheaded the multicultural division for Kia Motors. So a lot of the multicultural outreach that Kia has done over the past maybe 4 or 5 years, he you know, spearheaded that on behalf of his client, or behalf of his company, and was able to give some, you know, some great insight on that as well. We then featured Cheryl Forsatz, who's a VP with McDonald's out of New York. She was at the time our chair for the National Diversity Committee for PRSA. And then our last chat, I figured we should just use a hometown person for our last chat of the year. And we just happened to have a jewel here in Nashville, Marianne Howland. She's owner of IBIS Communication, and she's the founder of the Global Diversity Leadership Exchange, where they have companies from people like FedEx to Johnson & Johnson, et cetera, come in, the CEOs, top C-suite folks, to come in and talk about what they're doing and how they're leveraging global diversity to try to impact their organizations at a greater capacity. And it just so happens that she's the founder of that organization and she lives here, and she did a great chat for us. So we've had seen some success in keeping the conversation going throughout the year. And that's really, I think, the key is that, yeah, through your monthly program, Diversity Month for the organization as a whole, we changed that last year to August. So as you think about your programming for the rest of the year, is there something you can do in August? Is there a Twitter chat? Is there a mixer that you can do with the organization that may be ethnic-based or an organization that may be veteran-based or something of that nature to show not only the diversity of the industry, but to show the diversity of your chapter as well, or to even improve the diversity of your chapter by being a more inclusive. So that's one of the things that I think kind of was one of the first things that we did to start to see some success in us having a diversity, program or initiative. The next thing we did was, and again, feel free to jump in. I feel like I'm just lecturing right now. Feel free to jump in. We did two other things, and then we can just toss around questions and comments or whatever. With our monthly luncheon, we diversify more of the speakers. As I said, we brought in, conversations about veteran. We brought in conversations, focused luncheon about the LGBT community and how to communicate what are the lifestyles, the demographics, what are the ways that we can better target that audience. We kicked it off with Anthony Carter, who former PRSA Foundation member, but was the chief diversity officer for Johnson & Johnson, and kicked off everything with him. And then we realized with all of that, we needed to really, we've done this, and we've got some feedback, and we've got people from all across the country looking at our webinar, looking at our YouTube videos and stuff like that. Well, what's our membership doing? What are they participating? Are they benefiting? What do they look like right now? And when we did that survey, we realized that we were just right in line with, as far as the demographics on the numbers on race, we were just right in line with what the foundation reported from their study, in that we saw some increases. We saw some increases in millennials and young professionals. We saw some seasoned members returning and being able to retain them. But we realized that with those numbers, we still had quite a bit of work to do. And so we're now on phase two of what that survey should look like, and trying to make sure that we not only retain our members, but recruit them as well with more diverse programs that help them learn beyond how to reach consumers of different races, ages, and genders, but also different lifestyles as well. So I'll pause and just feel free to throw out any questions or comments that you might have.
On the seniors, this is Dr. Joe Turan. On the seniors, how many of the seniors participate in your programs? How many? Because one of the things, I guess I'm one of those seniors myself. I'm up there, but been around for a while. How many participate? Do they keep coming back? You said a small percentage of them.
A very small percentage of them participate.
Okay.
We have a good number of them, of course. And this actually parallels with many just the behaviors overall of maybe your baby boomer generation. They pay their dues, and they're active by way of, they're financially active.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had a lot of conversations over the past year or two about how to engage them. And one of the things that we thought was to, bring them back to speak, bring them back to host to sit on a panel, bring them, engage them in their expertise. Get them, ask them to be a part of committees, not only ask that young professional to be a part, but invite that seasoned professional to be a part as well. Think of the ways that we can really, really engage them versus them just coming, to one of our lunches and paying. But we did see that those numbers were, as far as involvement, were kind of low. But as far as, being financially active and maintaining their membership, those numbers weren't necessarily all that low.
Yeah, I'm wondering maybe an idea, maybe just on top of my head, maybe a reverse mentorship with maybe the young pros that you have in the chapter with the seniors and match them up. I just almost like a reverse type of mentorship, just an idea.
Yeah, that is definitely something that we have talked about. We haven't launched that yet, but it's something that we have tossed around, absolutely, with our with our new president at the helm, Amanda Murphy.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments, or ideas?
I've got one. It's Natalia from the Charlotte chapter. You mentioned that very lengthy report, and I'm on the PRSA site, and I can't seem to find it in the diversity. Is it something that's on the website, or is that something that you need to share with us?
No, it's on the foundation website. So if you go to PRSAfoundation.org, it should probably be kind of front and center, you know, left, right, yeah. But it's a good report. It definitely shows, you know, some things that we probably knew, but to see it on paper and to see the recommendations, to see the comments that some of the practitioners made as it relates to what they need in mentors, what they need in the workplace, why they don't stick around in their first job because they felt out of place, they didn't feel like they belong. You know, just to be able to read through it really is really impactful to read through it and to think about how your chapters can really improve those numbers.
I remember being at the National Assembly in D.C., I guess, 2 years ago, and one of the luncheon speakers was from the foundation, and the information that they shared with us was just mind-boggling to me. Would that be the same report, or is it an updated report?
It's an updated report. This one literally just came out, I want to say, in October, if I'm not mistaken, October, November, and they hosted a panel. They did a very small survey. You're right. They did a small survey about a year or two ago and realized as a result of that survey they needed to do something that was a little bit more expansive.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this is a new one that, again, is about 60 pages, if I'm not mistaken. It's got a lot of content in it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is Kirsten from Charlotte as well. I'm wondering about the diversity toolkit. You said it was recently updated. Is that on the PRSA website, correct?
Yeah, yes, that is on the PRSA website. So if you go to if you go into Google PRSA diversity toolkit, the old one will probably pop up. And the old one is still valuable, but we've got
that
one
from 2007.
Yes, it is. It's time for that one to be updated.
Yeah,
but
I was in the Miami chapter when that came out, so I definitely
good. Rosanna Fisk.
Some updates.
Yeah, Rosanna Fisk kind of spearheaded, definitely, yeah, she did spearhead that whole process. So we've been tossing it around for the past 6 months or so, and I believe it just got approval, if I'm not mistaken, because there's some elements in there that we are getting ready to share with the chapter and chapter leaders, and we'll probably, email to you all on a link because it hasn't been posted yet. So we're probably going to put it on a link so everybody can have it handy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, comments, ideas? Okay, Ariel, anything else you'd like to add?
Much that I could say. I guess I'd love to know if you feel like you have any challenges with creating a diversity program. Yes, we have the toolkit, but, you know, every chapter is different. And, you know, there's no mandate at this time for each chapter to have an initiative. It just makes good sense, just like, you know, a company having a strategy makes good sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes good business sense.
Totally agree.
Because,
again,
yeah, with the demographics changing, with, you know, I teach at Lipscomb University. I teach the PR classes, and I'm also the advisor of the PRSSA chapter. And I often have to remind my colleagues, there's a class that I teach that specifically includes some diversity and inclusion learnings, and it's called cross-cultural communication. I have to remind my colleagues, what are my students going to do, or what are our students going to do when they graduate from college, and their boss is an Asian woman, and she's married to a Hispanic woman, and they've adopted a baby from Africa. That student's coworker has a visible disability. Another coworker is a veteran, and perhaps one of their clients just recently went through a gender switch. How are we preparing our students to deal with that? right? Mm-hmm. And to grapple with all of those differences, because the people that they're encountering don't come from where they come from or don't look like them. I think we make an assumption that, okay, yeah, we'll be fine. We can handle that. I can deal with people who are different than me. But there's a different kind of approach. There's a certain enlightenment and awareness that you often have to have in the forefront of your mind when you're communicating cross-culturally. So I think that from an organizational standpoint, we not only do we have to be make those points relevant, but we also have to again realize that everybody who I named who may be different than those students who are going into the industry, they buy things, they make money, they have families, they probably value their communities, and they need to be related to, they need to be communicated to. So yeah, that's kind of my thing that I have to kind of paint a picture to show that as our world changes, we've got to be prepared. And I think it's responsible for our organization to make sure that we have practitioners, young ones specifically, in our industry and in our organization who reflect what our changing demographic looks like in our world. So if there are opportunities for you to mentor students who maybe of a different ethnicity than the general makeup of your chapter, if you have an opportunity to talk about or do case studies or present case studies to your chapter about what it meant to do a multicultural campaign in certain organizations, that helps keep the conversation going, and that's important.
I agree. Excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, ideas, anything for anybody? Well, all right. I guess, Becky, I'll turn it back to you. Ariel, I want to thank you. You made some great points about
the
importance of our awareness and involvement and how important it is for inclusion to make our chapters better. And thank
yeah.
you very much,
and
Ariel.
Thank you for having me. And you all feel free to find me on LinkedIn and send me a request. As I said, I'm super engaged locally as well as nationally in the organization. So I'd love to if you and I'll also you'll be hearing from myself and our other chapter liaison on some of the initiatives that we have and resources that we want to provide to you. So I look forward to connecting with you.